And my name's Mick, I'm an addict. I was sitting here. Thank you very much for your chair. Thanks for taking the meeting. Thanks for asking me to speak. And thanks everyone for being here. I was sitting here a minute ago and I was sort of caught into some sort of adrenaline. You know, when I was sitting there, I had this burst of adrenaline that was continuous while I was waiting. I had a calm at the same time. And I sort of thought about that and I thought, it's because my mind's okay that I haven't run away. Because I just run. When I'm scared, you know, I'll just run. And, you know, I'll share my story. It will be different from other people's. It will be different. There will be lots of differences. There may be some similarities. And if there ain't, there's lots of meetings and, you know, keep going to meetings. If you're new, you're very welcome. If you're from somewhere else, you're very welcome. Nice to see you, to meet you. Yes, I'm just a little bit anxious. So I just need to allow myself to find my way a little bit. I don't know what I'm going to speak about. But I would like to touch on sort of sponsorship, step service and stuff like that. So I'll try and put that in my story. I was brought up in a dysfunction. Well, there was a lot of violence. I was scared. I was very scared as a child. My mum was extremely violent, and so you know, I felt very uncomfortable in my own skin indoors. I didn't feel that uncomfortable outside. So it was indoors, it was really intense, you know, I was on red alert, you know, I didn't know what was happening, you know, it was better to not get any eye contact with her. It was sort of relational stuff from the very beginning was damaged for me, based on that relationship. So, you know, that's just how it was. And then I get to about 12, and she's ruled this, my life, really rigid, and she leaves when I'm about 12 years old. So, and then my dad starts to drink. You know, he can't deal with it. She's left him. She's run off. He's left with two young kids, and so he starts to drink. And then it falls apart. It just falls apart. So I stop going to school. There's no one to get me up to go to school. There's no one to feed me. There's no foods in the cupboards. There's just nothing there. You know, I'd walk into the house, it just was very, very cold. It was really, really cold. I just felt so cold walking into that. And so that's how it started. So does it make me an addict? I don't know. It certainly played a massive part in what happens next. An absolute massive part. Yeah, so I'm living in this environment, and so I try to find it somewhere else. So I've also got a belief that I'm no good, that I'm bad, and that I'll never amount to anything. And you know, very, very, very harsh on myself with that. Very, very, like, self-attack extremely hard. So I start to use around 12, 13. I start to commit crime around 12, 13. And I'm gone. I'm gone. I was just gone. You know, but I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for that today, in the sense that, because what would have happened to me if that didn't happen? I don't know. I don't know how I could have managed. I don't know how I could have managed my internal world and all my psychological well-being without an obsession and a massive drive to use substances. I don't know how I function without that. So my recovery started. I got arrested around the corner. I was in Covent Garden, and I got arrested, and you know, I committed an offence, and then I walked out, and this guy ran past me, and I've shared this story here a few times, and He ran past me and I recognised him. He was plain clothes and I knew what was happening and I knew exactly what was coming. Mm. And he sort of ran round, he ran in front of me and I sort of turned round and I got the others behind. I was like a lunatic. I was doing everything I could to get away. Everything. And I'm shaking. So I was doing everything I could to get away. I was running, you know, they was dragging me, I was running, you know, they was on top of me, I was falling down, I was just trying to get away, you know. I got two children and they didn't enter my mind. They didn't enter my mind. And, you know, it was just that, and I just knew what was coming. I knew the separation from the substance was on its way. I knew that. I knew what I was going to go through. I knew I was going to go through having to be with myself. And that was absolutely horrendous. You know what? Whatever I become was better than what I was. Yeah? It was just better. Anything was better than being me. And you know, and then what happened, and, you know, I was struggling, was hitting me with their, you know, their asp or whatever they're called. They was hitting me with them. And you know, finally, you know, they got me on the floor. You know, they got me face down. You know, one's got their knee on my neck, sort of in my head. One's got their knee on my back. One's sitting on my legs. And I just thought, it's done. And you know, and all I could say and all I could think about was the, I could hear the doors closing, I could hear the prison doors closing, I could just see that. I ain't thinking about my children. Still, my children, I don't believe at this point, have entered my mind. And my partner, you know, it's just not come to mind for me. So anyway, they take me to the police station. The police station's just there, right there. They take me in there. And then they keep me there for a couple of days, and then they remind me in custody. I go to court, they remind me in custody. And then, and I'm used to being in custody. You know, I'm used to this lifestyle. You know, I've become, this is what I've become. You know, and are they right to lock me up? Lock me up? Absolutely, of course they're right to lock me up. But, so I do that. And then I used to really defend this illness. I never tried to stop using. I thought about stopping using when I was using. And, you know, I come up with some great plans with my pal. He was working in a detox. He was using. So I really believed he knew what he was talking about. And he'd go, we'll do this. And, you know, we'll be passing the drugs about. He'd go, we'll do this, we'll do that. It'll be all right. You know, like, just insane. And then, you know, and I wake up in the morning and the first thing that I wake up with is me. Too much. You know, I need to change the way I feel. I don't need to change the way I feel. I need to stop the way I feel. You know, I need to stop that. I need to stop anything between my feet and my head. I have to desensitise myself. I have to do it. I cannot bear to function in this world as an of myself. Just cannot do it. And so I've lost myself, but that's all right. That's all right. So I protect this illness. I just protect it. You know, I would always be getting arrested and they'd go, you know, how about you go into treatment, or how about you do this, or how about you do that, probation officers, family, you know, how about you go into treatment? I go, I don't need treatment. Solicitor, barrister, you know, why don't you go into treatment? I don't need treatment. Nothing wrong with me. Yeah, I've got about 38 previous convictions, all drug related, every one of them, yeah, every one of them, all about the ways and means to get more, every single one of them. So it was like this, so what happens, and as I say, the way I protect this illness is so clever that I can't even see it, I don't even know, it's just the way it is. So anyway, what happens, a probation officer comes to the prison to visit me to do a pre-sentence report. And I do this report with her, And she's saying to me, you know what? Do you know why did you commit the offence? What was the reason for committing the offence? Is it drug related? I said, you know, I commit the offence because that's what I like to do. You know, it's nothing to do with drugs. I make a full decision, a conscious decision when I go out to commit offence. That's it. So she wrote a pre-sentence report. And in that report, she wrote that he has no empathy for his victims. And that's me trying to be smart. Yeah, that's me. I've pulled out the best I can, and I end up in court, and the judge stopped it. He stopped. You know, my barrister stood up. He said to my barrister, "You know what?" He said to me, he just said to me, "Stand up." He said, "You know, I've read the report." He said, "Custody doesn't work for you." You know, I spent about 8 years in prison. He said to me, custody doesn't work for you. He said, but my job is to protect the public, and I will give you... So what he said, I'm going to remand you in custody again. I'll remand you in custody for another 4 weeks. He said, and when you come back, if you haven't considered any other option around treatment or stuff like that, he said, I'm going to give you a lengthy custodial sentence. So straight away I thought, I can get out. So I leave the courtroom and I'm going down the stairs and I'm like, that probation, and I share it here, you know, I haven't got a different story to tell really, so I'll go down the stairs, I'll go, I need to see the probation officer. They said, why do you need to see the probation officer? I said, and I'm a getter, and I said, I need to go into treatment. She said, what's this? And I said, it feels like the right time. So then I just grafted it. Now I'm grafting it. Now I'm like a dog with a bone. I've got it. You know, I'm on this now. So, and what I do, you know, it takes a bit of time. They keep reminding me in custody. And then what I do, I ring up my mum and I go, Mum, you know what? You need to take me to treatment. You know, they want someone. They want to send someone with me, but you, Mum, I need you to do this. So I graft her. And anyway, so it starts to go through. It goes through. So all of a sudden, so the judge knows that my mum's going to come. She's going to take me to Western Supermare. Everything's set up to go. So on the day that I end up going up to get the sentence, he sentences me to a drug treatment testing order. And he's about to send me down. And he said, where's his mum? And they said, she weren't there. So he went, don't release him till his mum gets here. I'm 38. Don't release him, right? So I'm downstairs in the cell, and it was a more of a holding cell. So there was about four of us in there, and I was smoking, and you know, I was talking. There was a couple of young kids in there. You know, I was talking all the gangster stuff. You know, I know him, I know her. He's no good, she's no good. They done this. I got that with him. I got that with her. You know, just banging these stories out. They're just mesmerised. You know, like, you know, they're just in it. It's all smoke. Can hardly see each other in there. Right? I'm in the middle of a story, and then the door opens, and the prison officer says, your mum's here now, you can go. So what I do then, I leave, he said to me, come back in front of me, you're going to get a lengthy custodial sentence. And I'd had sentences of a couple of years, 2.5 years and things like that, so I knew he was going to go a lot further, yeah? So I leave the court and I take my mum, and she says, where are you going? I says, I just got to do something. She said, but you... I said, come on, mum, come on. Yeah. So she's like, so anyway, I take her and I go and score. I go into her house, I leave her outside the house. I go into the house and then I get on the train, abused, I get on the train. I turn up in the evening for this rehab. They was meant to be meeting me in the afternoon or something like that. Anyway, it turns out, so I speak to a cab driver. I said I was meant to be getting picked up by a cab. They take me to the rehab. So I go to the rehab, and then, you know, they give me a detox. I needed a detox. So they give me a detox. The same day my detox ran out was the same day that the drugs I brought in ran out. So after about a week later, so it was really horrendous. Mm. You know, that's the great thinking I come up with again. How do you come up with great ideas like that? Do you know what I'm saying? And what happens? I'm there. I find it very difficult. I don't know how to comply. I don't know how to, you know, I don't know how to be met with. I don't know how to meet authority. I just don't know how to do anything. You know, I just really, really a bit like an animal. Really, I just don't know how to do. Well, not an animal, but really underdeveloped. Really, really underdeveloped. And so I'm there. All of a sudden, I get, you know. They was on me. They used to be on me. They was on me there. They was all over me. Every one of them all over me. And I'd go, you know what, drop me out, leave me alone. They'd go, you think you're still in jail. You've got an attitude. You know, you've got a prison attitude. You're this, you're that. And then they kept going to me. And it just kept going on and on and on like that. So one day I just went to more. I was in group. All right, I'm powerless. And they was like, yeah. I didn't have a clue what I was on about. So I just said I was powerless to everything then. I just learnt this language, I just picked it up. You know what you say to me, put the kettle on, I go, powerless. and when you used to go in, you used to stay in the ashram, when you go to the centre in the morning, they used to look at your eyes and check if you shaved, and it was like that. And then I was just nuts, and the guy said to me, you ain't had a shave today. And I went, because I'm powerless. And I was just, it was just how I was. But they sort of rolled with me a little bit. They just allowed me, they suffered me a little bit. You know, the woman who was sort of more in charge of me, she was all right with me. She was okay with me. And she knew that I just couldn't, she just knew that I couldn't do any more than I was doing. She knew that. And so a complete treatment. A complete treatment, and I come back to London 5.5 months, and I've still got this court order. But in this time, I start going to meetings, and I started going to the meetings in Western Supermare, and I'd go to the meeting, and it was all men. I think that's a terrible meeting, this meeting. And I'd go, if there was a woman, I think this is a great meeting. And you know, if the woman was doing it, I think excellent. just really a bit nuts, you know, aftershave on, all teeth broken, and so they're like about 7.5 stone or something like that. It looked like I was dead, really. So I come back to London, I'm doing the same thing, you know, I'm banging it out, I'm this, I'm powerless, I get a sponsor. I get a sponsor and I tell everyone I've got a sponsor, I'm powerless, and I'm just banging out this language. You know, I do this, work this to the best of my ability. But it was working, it worked. You know, it worked. When I first got clean, no one gave me their phone number. No one gave me their phone number. So I need to look at why no one gave me their phone number. Yeah? But you know, I was like that, was very shut down. I didn't allow people to come near me. Yeah? So I was banging out the meds. But what I did about 10 months clean, or 9 months clean, or maybe a bit earlier, I took on a literacy. And the further I got away from my using, the more difficult it became. Mm. Yeah? I didn't hit the floor running. I hit the floor and fell flat on my face. Mm. My self-esteem was on the floor. I couldn't string a sentence together and finish it. So it was like, you know, I'd start speaking and that shame, just who I was just burn me. You know, I was just burnt. I just couldn't do it. I just didn't know how to do it. You know, everyone else was doing it. I can't do it. You know, I was just, that's how it was. You know, I'd be halfway through a sentence and my head would drop. It becomes so hard for me. And, you know, and I kept nicking the day. I was going to a meeting every day. I went to a meeting every day. And then... You know, I'm in meetings. You could smoke in the meetings. I'd be outside the meeting smoking, you know, taking the piss out of everyone who was inside the meeting. And then what happened? I was in a meeting, and there was a guy there. Oh, sorry, I was saying about the literacy commitment. I've lost again, but that's all right as well. Yeah, keep getting lost. So with the literacy commitment, I took this literacy commitment, and I just didn't have the self-esteem to do it. So I took it on, and then it was getting near the end of the meeting. I said to someone next to me, I'm the literacy person for this meeting. I've just got to pop out. Will you announce the literature? But it worked. They done it. I've got the clap at the end of the meeting. Normal stuff. And then, you know, and then what I did, you know, and I started to take on other commitments at meetings, you know, and, you know, my self-esteem was so low. I was really, there was not a lot there. The only thing that was really there was that the light was on. That's the only thing that was there. And, you know, and I took a tea person's commitment. I used to hate people. You know, like, you go do your own sugar, I'd fall apart. You know, my internal world was so fragile that my self-esteem depended on what I did for you. So if you could do something for yourself, you know, I'm in all kinds of trouble. And so I started doing that. Then I started taking a secretary meeting, and the meeting had started at 7:30. I just let everyone keep talking. I just leave them talking, they'll be talking, people start looking. I just let them carry on, 20 to 8, 25. You know what? The more time you talk, the less time you've got to look this way. Yeah? And that's how it was. But you know what? So I was doing that, and I meet a guy in this time, and you know, and I don't know how to do this stuff, so I let go of the guy who wasn't sponsoring me, who I was telling everyone he was. I moved on, I've got this other guy. And we started to do some work together. I started to go through the work and I started to do the steps. And, you know, I got an understanding. And I got an understanding of what was wrong. And I got an understanding around the obsession. And I got an understanding of the way I react and the way I respond and how I have a lack of power. And I got an understanding of that. And then, but what I start doing at this same time, I'm doing this work with my sponsor. He's still my sponsor now. I've been with him for about 11 years now. So it's probably, I've been clean for just over 12 years. And, you know, and I was doing this stuff here that was helping me to develop some self-esteem. I was doing the work with him that was getting me to look at the way I ticked. And then I started to take it outside of here. So, you know, and he said to me, I'd done a step forward with my sponsor, and he said to me, and I read this stuff out to him, you know, I read something out that I'd never told anyone, you know, that for my life, I was full of shame. You know, I hadn't told anyone, and you know, and I read out the stuff around my mum, and I read the stuff around sort of the violence I'd experienced, and I read out the fear that I experienced, and, you know, how receptive and how red alert I was around things. And he said to me, at some point, you might need to have a look at this professionally. And so I said, okay. So, you know, so then I start to take this stuff out. I start to take it out of, I start to go out there. You know, it says in the 12th step, we practice these principles in all our affairs. Well, when I got here, I had no principles and I had no affairs. Well, I had one affair, and that was with the substance, and it was about how I'd get more. That was the only affair that I had. Yeah? So I start to develop some stuff here. I start to learn some stuff and I start to go out and I start doing a little bit of training. I remember the last thing I remember doing at school was at primary school, and it was I read a story. That was the last thing that I remembered in my education. And so I'll go back into this world, I'll go and do a basic drug awareness course or something like that. And what happens, so I don't know how to do it. So I'm there, so I'm all right at turning up. I've learned how to do that. So I turn up all the time, I turn up every time. But I don't know how to do the own work, I don't know how to do it. So what I decide to do, I decide that I'm going to cheat. So, I don't know what else to do, what else are you going to do? Huh? What do you do when you're full of fear and you're trying to move forward? And, you know, I'm absolutely riddled with fear and shame and guilt, yeah? So I've got the bag, I've got someone's bit of work off them, I'm going to hand in the piece of work. I get to the people, I think I'm about 12 months clean at this point or something like that. And I said to her, I haven't done the work. And so I completed that course, and then, I never got the certificate for doing that. I got the certificate for completing the attendance, but I never got the certificate for doing the written piece of work. So, and then after that, so I'm still coming to meetings, I'm learning, you know, I've learned, you know, I can engage with people here quite well. And, you know, and I'm taking it out there, you know. I'm not doing as great with it out there, but, you know, I keep coming back and I keep going and keep coming back and keep going. How long have I got?
Oh, 10 minutes. 10 minutes more.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going. So so I do that. So then I start to do some more training. I go. I want to be a drug worker. What else do you want to be? Huh? What else am I going to be? Huh? What do I don't think I can do anything else. I can't do it. What, am I going to do anything else? You know? I didn't know. I probably thought you had to just tell people how to take drugs. So I do that. So I do some training, and I qualified as a substance. I've done an MVQ in level 3 in health and social care. But you know, one thing that I knew when I was clean, I got clean, I had nothing. And it's not about what you've got, but it was I had nothing inside. And I had nothing outside. And I knew at 38 that what I've got is not enough. Yeah? And it wasn't, you know, and I remember someone saying, you know, I started to do some study, and I remember someone said to me, you're obsessive. You've become obsessive about studying. I thought, you nuts. You know, I hide under the table shaking. I never had an obsession like that. I never had an obsession that I met that way. Yeah? It was the opposite. I was full of fear. Absolutely. So I'd done that. So I'd done that training. And then I thought, so then what happens? I get to 4.5 years clean, and the stuff that I spoke about in my childhood with my sponsor starts to come back. So it starts to come back. So I start to think about it. I start feeling the shame. You know, I start judging myself. You know, I start burning up. So at this point, that's starting to happen for me, and then my dad dies. So what I decided to do, and I always remember what my sponsor said, you might need to go and look at some of this stuff professionally. This, he said, it isn't for me to do this with you. You know, he was excellent in what we've done. He was really supportive. He was really loving. I developed a relationship with another human being that was different from the relationship that I had with the substance. It changed. It started to change based on that, based on coming to meetings and an interpersonal relationship. And so what happens then? I go into therapy. You know, I'm working, and I go to therapy, and I do some work in therapy. And they'd done a thing with a couple of chairs. And he went, you know, put that side in that chair, put that side in that chair. So I do some of that stuff, and I'm like, wow. And I'm like, it really, really helps. It was just absolutely unbelievable. And I said to him, what was that? And he said, that's a technique from this. So I go, okay. So I'm at work somewhere else. I work somewhere else one day of the week with a sort of multi-organisation. And I'm typing away, and a guy behind me mentions the same name. This is about 3 months later that the guy told me that the method was that I'd done it with the chairs. And he said he was going to go and do a course, a certificate course in counselling. And I thought, there was just something there. And I thought, shall I go and do that? So I went and done that. I went and done a certificate in counselling. And you know, when I got an essay, 1,500 words, petrified me, absolutely horrified me. Yeah. Still going to meetings, still going to service, doing service, sponsoring people, talking to my sponsor, doing what we do. I get through. Yeah, I get through. Then I think. So, but you know what happens? I start when I'm in something at this stage. I thought, I don't want to be here. I want to be in that diploma class, yeah? I don't want to be... you know that thing, you give me a book, an introduction to counselling, I'll hide it, yeah? You give me a book that's got big names in it, I'll jump on the bus like that. Yeah? Like that, like, yeah? I'm like that. Even though I ain't reading it, I'll be like that. Yeah? I'll be putting it like that. So the thing is, so I still knew that what I had was not enough. That's what it was. It wasn't enough. I knew it wasn't enough. I needed more. The thing is, so I need more recovery, but I need to develop myself personally. You know, and I'm doing all right with my sponsor, but you know, everything's going all right. You know, my dad's died, you know, I'm in this, and then so I finished that, and then I applied for the diploma in counselling. So I go on to the first year of the diploma in counselling, I thought, I don't want to be in this class. I want to be in that class, right? Which is the second year of the Diploma in Counselling, yeah? So I crack on, you know, I'm doing all right, I'm learning how to do essays, you know, I'm getting some help, you know, I'm quite good in certain areas of the what I'm studying, around listening to audio, and some people that I've palled up with are quite academic. So now I'm helping them, they're helping me. So all of a sudden, boom, still got the language though, and it whatever I've done, I still come up with that mad language. I get the Diploma in Counselling. But when I'm in the diploma, the second year of the Diploma in Counselling, I think I don't want to be here. I want to be there in that class, right? So I want to do a postgraduate diploma. Yeah, I want to do a postgraduate diploma. Now the gap is getting higher and higher. The distance in between is becoming more difficult. Yeah. I'm full of fear, you know what, I'm still trying, I'm still tackling it, you know, I'm still going, you know, I'm getting help, I'm meeting my sponsor, things in my life's taken over. You know, I'm working full time, the study comes to a lot of money, I have to pay for therapy, I have to pay for supervision, I have to see clients, I have to do everything, I have to write essays. You know, my personal life is highly impacted. Yeah? Highly impacted. Things start to change, my partner's children start to come back into her life. She's a recovering addict. She's a lovely person. She's, do you know she's a lovely person? But it starts to change. And that's all right. It's all right. You know, absolutely worship her. She worships me, but things change. So I'm continuing with the study, you know, I'm full in it, you know, it's on me, it's taking, you know, I'm leaving work, I'm going to work, I'm leaving work, I'm going to work, I'm leaving work, I'm going to work. And then I get through the postgraduate year. Thank you. I get through the postgraduate year. But while I'm in the postgraduate year, I think, I don't want to be in this class. I want to be in that master's class. Yeah? I end up in the master's class. I end up doing a master's in psychotherapy. The same year I'm doing the master's in psychotherapy, I get a diagnosis of dyslexia. Yeah, but I still keep going, you know, it's very hard for me, you know, it took me two and a half years, you know, and I passed it. I passed that. And you know what I've done it on? I've done it on psychotherapy and the 12 steps. Yeah? And I've done a personal, it's called a heuristic inquiry, where I use my own experience as the research, and I linked the same relationship that I developed within a group here that would be in group psychotherapy, and the link that I developed with my sponsor, the same way as I developed relationships with my clients as a psychotherapist. Mm. Yeah, and I tied it together. Mm. And they want to publish it. They want to publish that. I'm not sure if I want to allow that, because I just want to, be a bit hard with it now, I suppose, yeah? But that's how it's ended up. You know, I haven't been arrested for a long time. Well, since that day out there. I've never been arrested again. You know, got better relationships with people in my life. I have some principles that I practice in all of the affairs that I've got. I've got bundles of affairs. Absolutely bundles. I work, you know, I work as a manager. I work as a psychotherapist. You know, I work, you know, I run groups as a psychotherapist. You know, help people, you know, I help people. So, and you know what, the greatest relationships that I have in the fellowship, not the greatest relationships, because I have a great relationship with my sponsor and the people who I sponsor, my sponsee, who I sponsor, whatever. But I have great relationships with them, but I really click with newcomers. Mm. You know, I still have that part of me that's difficult. You know, I'm all right with who I am. Mm. It's just how it is. You know, I'm all right with that. You know, I don't need to change everything. Some things are just how they are. I'm all right plodding along. But every morning, I contact newcomers. Every morning. Every night before I go to bed, I contact newcomers. Every night. Yeah? I've done it consistently. And, you know, I don't ring my sponsor as much no more. Thank God I don't need to. Mm. I'm all right with people who are sponsor not ringing me. I'm absolutely, I think, you know, they're doing all right. They're doing all right. You know what? How do we develop? You know, I learned to develop here. I learned to develop here, and I supported other people to develop here. We supported other people. We support other people to do that. And, you know, and I love being clean. Absolutely love being clean. But, you know, I just want to thank you for listening to me. I wish you all well. And have a lovely evening. Thank you.